Hello, hello, welcome back to the Hiker Podcast. It's me, Owen Hamilton, your host. I am delighted to be in front of a microphone again. It's been so long. It's a new microphone. I hope you can tell. It's a really nice microphone. 2021 has been a crazy year for Hiker. It's been a while since I've done this. There's just been a lot going on. I'm pretty sure the last time we spoke, I mentioned that we were getting a bit of funding. Yeah, Hiker is now a funded company. We have been able to make this our full-time job. So I've been pretty busy with all the other marketing stuff that's been going on, but it's been a wild ride so far, and it just keeps getting better, gets more and more fun every day. It's tough, I'm not gonna lie, it's tough, but it's fun. Personal notes as well, I've moved house. I've just moved into a new house with my girlfriend. We're settling in here. This is where I've set up a little makeshift studio. Paul has moved house and he got married. And there's just been a lot of things going on in the Hiker team. Our Hiker team has actually grown now, so we're growing pretty fast. Hiker as well, we're closing in on 5,000 trails. I can't even remember the last number I said. I think it was something like maybe 2,000 trails max. We're closing in on 5,000 trails. And I'm going to let you in on a little bit of a secret. Early next year, we're going to almost triple that. So keep an eye out for that. Also, we're over 180,000 users worldwide. Yeah, it's been a crazy year, and myself and Paul finally got to finish the Wicklow Way. It was the trail that I think we spoke about on the second episode of the podcast, where we had to come off because of COVID. So over the summer, myself, Paul, and a bunch of other friends, we got to finally finish that. It was only an overnight trip from Glendalough back into Dublin, but it was a lot of fun, and it was great to finally get that one done. So, season three is going to be a big one. There's more interviews. I'm going to have more regular shows. I'm going to do this on a weekly basis, and you guys are going to hold me to that. If I do not put out a podcast every week, you got to get on me. You got to shake me and make me do it. So on the podcast this season, we are going to have more hikers. We're going to have trail angels. We have activists. We have trail organizations. We have gear nerds and many, many more. Also, Hiker podcast listeners will now get up to 25% off any Hiker Pro subscription. So just use Hiker Pod, that's HIIKERPOD, as a promo code at the checkout, and you'll get up to 25% off any of our pro features. And just in case you don't know what that is, Hiker is an app. It's a website as well, but it's an app both on Android and iOS. It gets you access to thousands of maps all around the world, which I just mentioned. We have nearly 5,000 maps or trails mapped all around the world. And Hiker gets you access to those trails. Hiker Pro will give you the functionality of offline maps. So you'll be able to plan out your entire journey. You'll be able to print your maps. You'll be able to download a GPX file down onto your phone or onto your Garmin watch or whatever you want. That's what you get with Hiker Pro. And with Hiker Pod as the promo code, you'll get up to 25% off. You're welcome. So first up on season three is a woman by the name of Kristen Berkeley. Kristen Berkeley is a hiker. She's a BIPOC activist, and she's the founder of Amplify Outdoors, a clothing label that's promoting more diversity in outdoor recreation. She's from Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, Canada, a place that I've become obsessed with since we started speaking. It's so cold there. Like, I haven't been there, but just looking at images and just like hearing about the temperatures that are there. Oh God, it's too cold. Just too cold. I'll give me, you know, crappy, muggy Irish wet weather any day of the week. I just can't deal with that level of cold. So this episode, we talk about racism. in the outdoors and the lack of BIPOC representation in the outdoor company marketing. And we talk about just racism in the outdoors in general. It was an uncomfortable conversation, but it was supposed to be. Kristen was a delight to speak to, but this is not something that gets talked about enough in our industry. These are the conversations that need to happen more often. It was great to hear Kristen share her stories from the trail and how she came about finding her organization, Amplify the Outdoors. I had a great time speaking to Kristen. She's definitely one of those guests that I'm going to keep in touch with and hopefully have on the show again. But without further ado, I'm going to stop yammering on here. I'm just really excited. Season 3, guys. It's back. We're back. Oh, sorry. One last thing before we go into the interview. I have to apologize in advance for the sound quality. It's not great. During this move, I didn't have access to a good microphone. I was in a random room in my parents' house. So, yeah, it doesn't sound great, particularly on my side. Anyway. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Kristen Berkeley, everybody.
So how is it in Yellowknife? Is it any colder than the last time we chatted?
Yeah, it's actually cold now. So, okay. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I think it's still warmer than it's supposed to be. So it's like, I didn't check the temperature today, but we've been sitting and like, yeah, we're in double digits, but it's still fairly warm for November. So we do have snow on the ground now, which we didn't have last time we spoke, which was very unusual. And so it's chilly, but I think it's just that it took long for it to get cold. So my body's slowly kind of adjusting. So I think I feel like it's probably colder than it is, but I mean, it's supposed to get so much colder. So, I mean, you know, like it's almost relative. Like it feels like it's cold, but it's not really as cold as it should be. But I've been just trying to, like, you know, dress warm and layer up when I go outdoors and still doing things, but yeah, it's gonna get pretty cold in the next couple of weeks for sure.
Because my girlfriend is actually over in Toronto right now, and I keep forgetting how colossally huge Canada is. Because I was like, oh, like if it's cold in Toronto, or it's a little bit cold in Toronto, it must be freezing in Yellowknife. But you're practically like, you know, you're in different time zones, and you're hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of miles away from each other.
Yeah, it's, you know what's funny? I'm actually from Toronto, and I feel like people don't realize that, yeah, like, it is cold in the north for sure, but I also think it's pretty cold in Toronto. Obviously, climate change has changed a lot of those things, so it's probably warmer than it normally would be, but it's very damp in Ontario compared to the north, where it's very dry. So that's why, like, even when our temperatures are pretty frigid, it's still not, it doesn't feel as bad right away because it's so dry, if that makes sense. You know,
Yeah. I think we can kind of get that here sometimes. Like at the moment, it's that it can't really make up its mind of whether it's cold or it's autumn. You know, it's starting to get cold, but it's really damp. Ireland is wet all the time, so it's either damp and cold or damp and hot. It's never really like dry heat.
Yeah.
So I think we get that a lot.
Yeah. For sure. So yeah, we have dry winters and we have really dry summers, and we're at risk for having forest fires because it gets pretty dry here. So, wow. I mean, that's another challenge that we also have. Yeah. I mean, we can get pretty hot. Like, I think there's this idea that if you live in the Northwest Territories or in like the subarctic or Arctic region, that like, it's just not going to ever get hot. But yeah, we can actually get pretty hot over here for sure.
Okay. Yeah, you wouldn't think that about anything that's in the subarctic at all, that it would get that hot, but
I mean, there's definitely been, when I first moved here, there were forest fires. Like, I could not go outdoors because it was really hazy and it smelled like smoke. Now, keep in mind that the fires are like probably a lot further from where I'm living, or it could even be like all the way in Edmonton and it was kind of like blowing over, which is not, it's a different place, right, from where we are. But yeah, like it's just, it's crazy how much what happens in other places can affect us as well, even though we can be very far away. But yeah, like it's interesting because that is a challenge we face, is sometimes we do have forest fires.
We can sit all here all day, and like as an Irishman, we love to talk about the weather. We really love to talk about the weather and it being cold and complaining about it. But let's talk about you. And I suppose a bit of a disclaimer for our listeners is that this is round two of recording this. We had some technical difficulties. Anybody listen to this show long enough will know that my novice level of IT knowledge or technical knowledge, that this is not the first time it'll happen, probably not the last time it'll happen either. But anyway, Kristen, thank you so much for coming onto the show. It was a delight to receive your message and your interest in coming on and sharing your story. I suppose just want to kick it off with asking you, how did you discover the outdoors? How did you, I suppose, get into hiking? But I suppose moreover, how did you discover the outdoors as a space?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on the show, first of all. And I have to say, like, I was not a very outdoorsy person. I'm from Toronto, Ontario, as I mentioned earlier, and I just didn't have that exposure, and it wasn't a part of my life. It wasn't a part of my childhood. My parents weren't trying to get me outdoors to do anything, really. Not to say I didn't do like any kind of sports, but like I wasn't doing hiking or camping or anything that's kind of associated with, like, you know, the conventional outdoorsy recreational activities, outdoors recreational activities, I should say. So that wasn't a world for me. And it wasn't that I really felt like it wasn't something I should not be doing, but I think I just wasn't exposed to it. And then also, when I thought about it, I usually would see like something like in an advertisement that really portrayed like a white family doing it. So it kind of didn't seem like something targeted to me, a Black woman. And, you know, I didn't really know anyone of color that was really doing any of those things except for one of my friends. But I just thought it was more like family bonding, to be honest. So I didn't really think of it as like this thing that they really enjoyed. So cut to like way later in life, I moved to the Northwest Territories for work. And I, you know, it didn't happen right away. Like I did not get into the outdoors right away. It was something that just slowly kind of grew. One of my friends invited me to go on a hike, and then we went and I was like, wow, this is really nice. And then slowly I started getting into it. But it wasn't an overnight situation. It just kind of slowly grew on me. And I realized like how much I loved the outdoors and just how beautiful it was and the benefits and how great I felt outdoors. So I would slowly kind of immerse myself, and I would ask friends that were doing things outdoors to like bring me along. And I would just try to like try different things, because I guess, as I like to say, you don't know you enjoy something until you do it. So I would try to do like all sorts of different activities, whether it would be like camping, which I experienced for the first time in the Northwest Territories, hiking, paddleboarding, again, first time in the Northwest Territories, like everything outdoorsy, I basically experienced for the first time in the Northwest Territories. So like you could totally say that like here, this place has really transformed my life and my experience and passion for outdoor lifestyle.
That's amazing. You know, with that position on the planet, you wouldn't expect a lot of people to uproot their lives and kind of move there for an extended period of time. What drove you out there? Sorry, you did say it was work, but what kept you there?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I moved here to be a reporter, basically. And the ironic thing is that I was offered a job opportunity in Toronto. So it was right around the same time that I got both of the offers. So I could have stayed, like I didn't have to leave, but I just felt like it would be an amazing experience. And I thought I should just, you know, try something different. I was ready to leave. The interesting thing is that I really had never left home before. So I never went away for school or anything. That was my first time moving away from my family. And I moved really far, and I moved to the subarctic. So really not a normal thing, not something most people do. You know, I don't think I don't know. Like, I sometimes I reflect on it and I don't think I really thought too much about it. I think I just felt like this was something I really wanted to try. And this is interesting to mention, though. Before I had moved here, I had written down a list of places I wanted to travel to, and it was like my top five. And I remember writing Yellowknife because I had watched a show and they were like, you need to see the Northern Lights. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write Yellowknife on this list. And then 6 months later, I'm now living here. I'm not visiting, I'm living here. But it's just interesting. Like, it's almost like manifestation. Like, you don't realize you're writing these things down, because I really would never have imagined that I'd be living in Yellowknife, really. You know, like, if you had told me 6 months ago, like before I had moved, that that would be the case. But so I ended up moving here for work and did not expect to be here for more than a year, to be honest. It was like this idea, like, I'm coming here for a year and then I'm going to leave. But I thought while I was here for that year, I would like just try a few things that were like a bit adventurous, but I didn't. The things that I'm doing now, like, I did not at all expect to be doing. Like, it wasn't on my agenda. It was just like, yeah, we're going to try to maybe see the Northern Lights. Like, you know, like something like that. And I like can't even imagine the things that I'm doing now. Like, it's not at all what I expected. My life is very different now, for sure. Definitely, I was such a city girl. And I still am a city girl at heart. But yeah, the North has really shaped me. And I like to say that it will always have a place in my heart because it's a very special place. And yeah, so I've been here now almost 4 years. So it went from being here for 1 year to now being here for almost 4 years. January will be my fourth year of living in the Northwest Territories. And, you know, it's not the easiest thing, I have to say. Like, I don't want people to think like, oh, every day is like winter wonderland or something, or it's just like this adventure all day long. There are challenges for sure. And it's like, you know, kind of like a roller coaster. But in general, it's been a good experience. And I'm really happy that I took that leap and like really pushed myself to try something different.
Happy anniversary, happy Yellowknife anniversary to you. The place does kind of fascinate me a little bit, because it's not just how far north it is, but it's the remoteness of it as well, that like, you heavily rely, or the city heavily relies on these ice roads to get in and out for large you know, freight, for to you know, stock shelves basically to get stuff in. It the primary form of transport for, like, if you wanted to get from Yellowknife to the Edmonton or to back to Toronto, it would be by flight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fastest way, even though it takes so long still. Like, I did not realize how large Canada is until I moved to Yellowknife. You know, and you were mentioning it earlier, like, you know, Canada is such a vast country and it's so large. And it takes me like 7 hours to get to Toronto. And then, you know, I mean, because I'm taking different planes to get over there, like there's layovers, it's not like a direct flight. So it's a long, it's a really, like, the Northwest Territories is very large. And then now, so yeah, I primarily focus on flying because that's just the easiest way. You can drive out of here. It does take a long time to get out of here, for sure. it will take a long time. I think you're looking at about 18 hours to get to Edmonton, 16 to 18 hours, wow, depending on how fast you drive. Yeah. And so, you know, it is pretty hard. And like, I wouldn't really advise driving in the winter to like do something like that. I have a friend that's done it before and people do it, but it's so much more like, you know, it's such a risk sometime in the winter because you're dealing with like different things, like especially like the extreme weather at that point. So if your car stops working and you're out on the road by yourself, it could be really challenging, right? But yeah, people do it. But anyways, so definitely a very big country. I would say that there's another way that we've had, so now we can get, like a lot of the times back in, before I moved here, basically, we didn't have a bridge. So this was like a couple of years before I moved here, there was no bridge. So we relied on, I guess, a lot of the stuff coming in when we relied on our winter roads, which essentially are the ice roads. So we would wait for the lakes to freeze over, and then trucks could like drive on it to drop off the food. But obviously there's like a freeze up period and a breakup period. So basically the freeze up is like waiting for the ice to freeze so that it's safe to like travel on. So during this point, like we didn't have any like vehicles coming in or out because we didn't have this bridge, which we now have. So I can go to Edmonton, but basically we didn't have it before. So there, it was basically like how you see a lot of the shelves in the grocery store during the pandemic. And I don't know how it was in Ireland, but you know, like I'm just talking about like, you know, not getting, having as much food on the shelves because people were just buying everything because they had to stock up because during the freeze up period, there was no food coming in because we were waiting on the lakes to freeze up properly for the vehicles to come over. So it's really interesting when you think like that, right? Think about how it was back then. And then of course, groceries were way more expensive because there was such a high demand for food because everyone was like, we need it now. We don't have this bridge. We don't have our frozen lakes yet, roads yet in place. So yeah, every time it would be like that point where it, now it's melting and nothing can drive on it. Then we also have to like also stock up on things, right? So I wasn't here for that, but I hear stories about it, especially more stories when the pandemic happened because it reminded people of when the shelves were becoming more bare and empty. And so I've heard a lot of stories about that, but it's interesting. And now we have a bridge, so we do get our food that way. It can come over through, it can cross over easily year round. It does take long still, so not everything is going to be fresh, to be honest. And there are communities that are way more remote than us that deal with even more issues with food and food insecurity. And, you know, it's just really expensive. It seems like the higher north you go for food and they rely on these frozen roads, which right now I would say are probably not that safe to drive on. So when you look at things like climate change, like all of that really affects us over here.
Wow. Okay. Like I didn't realize there was, I suppose, a direct link bridge now that would supply things to you. But I suppose it's great to hear that you do have that.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it still sounds like it's a very remote and getting that fresh food and fresh produce because it's, you know, the land that's around there is probably not the best for, like, it's not, probably not the most arable land, I would imagine.
You know, it's interesting because I don't grow, so I can't really comment too much about it, but I've had friends that have made, like, we have community gardens here in the summer, and people will grow all types of vegetables. So I've heard people say they like the opposite, that they think that you can, that the soil is so rich, but I imagine it depends on like where you're growing your vegetables. Cause I still think that it can be a struggle, especially because we don't have as much sunlight. We only have a lot of sunlight in the summer, which would probably be really nice for vegetables, but I don't know if it's a problem being overexposed to sunlight also. But there are greenhouses. A lot of my friends grow their own vegetables indoors. So they make like these little like spots in their house where they can like grow all sorts of different types of things. So people try to do things like that. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure it's a struggle regardless, because I know of people that have tried to like use their, like, you know, they tried to turn like a lot into a garden and it was just too difficult to do that. So there are challenges for sure. I know some of the communities have greenhouses that they've been, that they've built recently, and that's what they're relying on for vegetables. And yeah, so, but we definitely are remote. Like, even though we have our bridge, we are remote still. And it takes very long for people to come here, to get over here. It's very far from, you know, a lot of different places. And it's just, it's a different experience entirely. Like, we don't even have, in Yellowknife, we have a lot of amenities, I'll have to be honest, but in other communities, the amenities, they just don't have the same kind of amenities. You know, like, we're very fortunate. We have, we just got a KFC and everyone went crazy for the KFC. Like, line up.
And you mentioned, I think the last time as well, you got a Starbucks as well.
Yeah, we got a Starbucks and KFC that opened up the same day. So it was just like pandemonium. Like, people were just going crazy for these things, like lining up forever on the road just to get into the Starbucks and the KFC. And I mean, I think Yellowknife, where I live, has a lot more amenities, but it's still not the same as living in a bigger city for sure.
Well, but by the sounds of it, the payoff is huge. You know, like, you do have these certain challenges that you have to go through, and it does kind of sound like it's almost like a mini experiment in you know, cultivation, you know, self-preservation, self-cultivation a little bit. But the payoff is it sounds like it's incredible. Like, you got the Northern Lights, you got all these amazing outdoor activities that are at your footsteps. And yeah, you'll deal with the struggle to get some groceries in. I don't mean to be flippant about that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think like we have, people say we have like some of the best Northern Lights in the world. And they've been coming out a lot lately, more so than I've ever seen. And they've been looking amazing. I've been living here for almost 4 years. And honestly, I've seen the Northern Lights more this year than I have at any time. Also, like, I live more in a city and there's a lot of lights. So, you know, you have to kind of drive out to where it's dark enough so you can see it. Some people are fortunate that they're like, they just happen to not have a lot of lights close to where they live and they can see it within the city limits. But yeah, usually I try to drive out or go with some friends to see it. And yeah, the Northern Lights are special. Like, they have been just magnificent. I know that there's been a couple of those global storms lately, or galactical, I forget their call.
Solar storms.
Solar storms. There have been quite a few solar storms. So they've been, very, very, very strong, like to the point where you can just, I saw pink last time and I've never seen pink in the sky, like dancing around, and it was just magnificent. Like, it was just one of those things where, you know, you just take in that moment and you just stare at it. Like, you don't really, you want to grab for your phone, but you also just don't want to miss it at all, because it's just amazing to watch what's happening in the sky. So that was amazing to just see green and pink and all these colors kind of twirling together, and dancing, as we say. So yeah, that for sure is an amazing perk of living in the north, for sure. And I think, like, just being exposed to nature, if that's something you enjoy. Not everyone is into the outdoors, so you do have I think you have different types of people that live here, and some people just really like the outdoors. I didn't move here thinking it would be a part of my life the way it is today, but I'm definitely one of the people that have now taken it upon myself to like really explore and just really enjoy it.
And well, thankfully, most of our listeners, I would imagine most of our listeners are into the outdoors, given the context of this. I hope you are, if you're listening to this. otherwise, you're too far into a podcast that's not for you. Or maybe we can turn you around. So I want to talk to you a little bit more about your life experiencing the outdoors. Like, when you discovered the outdoors and you discovered this love for it, you also had a moment of kind of realizing that there's not many people that, you know, represent you in the outdoors, in the outdoor community, that in advertising. Can you tell me a little bit more about your lived experience as a Black woman in the outdoors?
Yeah, so I think for me, like I was saying, when I grew up in Toronto, it wasn't really something my family members were kind of introducing to me or trying to get me exposed to. And then when I came to the north, again, like, I wasn't really thinking about the outdoors too much. And then I got invited on the hike. I started to really enjoy it. And then I started to think, like, oh, I should start doing more things. So then I go to this water festival with my friend, and it was in a different community, and I really thought that there would have been just more representation because of the types of people that I know live in that community. And I just thought, okay, like, it's going to be pretty diverse. And then when I go there, it's not. And I thought, this is really odd that there's not that much diversity right now, because I thought there'd be more, especially where we are located right now. So, you know, she felt a bit uncomfortable because she's also a woman of color. And she mentioned to me that she felt like she was really visible because she didn't see anyone that looked like her. And I said, you know, that's how I feel too. And it was just this weird feeling. Like, I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel very welcomed. No one said hi to me. And I think it really was that moment where it kind of solidified that feeling of like underrepresentation and otherness, where you're like, wow, like, is this really a space that I should be in? You know, because like, no one is approaching me, and it's a water festival, so people should be kind of more friendly. And it just felt strange. And I wanted to write them a letter about saying, like, how come, you know, there's not a lot of diversity. This was years ago, by the way. So I wanted to write this letter, or I wanted to say something, because the fact that I felt this way and my friend felt this way, I imagine that a lot of people felt this way as well. Like if they've been in other spaces, not like this particular event, but at other, you know, I don't know, like races or activities that are outdoors, like there must be this feeling of like really feeling othered and not that you belong, like, and feeling like you don't belong outdoors. And you know what, a lot of people, they experience racism and different things like that too. So yeah, it just wasn't the most inviting feeling, and it stayed with me. And then it kind of, you know, you go to stores that are for the outdoors and you would just see like all the ads were really trying to, like, they were just depicting white people, to be honest. And there wasn't any representation or diversity. So it just continues to perpetuate that idea that like, this is what an outdoorsy person looks like. This is what the outdoor, this is who the outdoors is for. And you feel kind of stigmatized and you feel uncomfortable, right? And yeah, it wasn't like, I feel like I knew that I was supposed to belong in this space, but there was also like marketing and things like that and like ads telling me like, no, you don't really belong here, you know? So I kind of felt like I was almost defiant at times. And that was why I started like the different things that I'm doing, because I was like, people need to see what representation and diversity outdoors looks like. Like I wanted people to see that I'm a Black woman living in the Northwest Territories, living in the subarctic, and what life could look like for me. I mean, I'm from the city and I'm really a city girl at heart, but like I live here and I'm outdoors and I'm enjoying it and it is really fun. And it doesn't matter what you look like, the outdoors is for everyone. So I started to just feel really strongly in my heart that I had to get that message out. And that's why you see so much on like my social media pages, that I'm constantly trying to like get outdoors and try different things and really try to like get that messaging out that like everyone should be outdoors and that it's for everyone.
Absolutely. And you didn't just, you know, you don't just say it on your social media. You've actually established a bit of an organization and a bit of a movement as well. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So I decided to create more representation or try to encourage more representation and diversity outdoors by starting an organization called Amplify Outdoors. And it's just about elevating and amplifying Black, Indigenous, people of color, and marginalized groups that are typically underrepresented in the outdoor spaces. We honestly just continue to be invisible in outdoor marketing and advertising, even though we're very much outdoors and we're living these lifestyles. And I felt like there needed to be some sort of like movement, or there needed to be a spotlight on this. So I started off by creating merchandise that basically kind of helps to create more representation and visibility and speak to the cause of like, you know, diversity being important outdoors and inclusion being important. So I have the Trailblazer collection that I created, and I feel like everyone's a trailblazer and we're breaking through paths and barriers every day. And then I recently released the Dream in Color collection, and I plan on releasing more collections, but essentially this, the entire, all the collections are about representation and diversity outdoors and trying to make people feel like they belong outdoors and that they can see themselves in these spaces. And, you know, we encourage allies to support us. The clothing is for everyone, but it's definitely to like really highlight the issues that we're seeing. Because I guess in my mind, if like marketers weren't going to make a space for us and weren't going to like, you know, have clothing that kind of showed us on in there or like tried to like make us feel invited, then I wanted to do that. I wanted to like say, you know what, we're going to like have clothes that like show that we belong in these spaces, and we're going to have clothes that depict people that look like us on it. And it, like I said, it's for everyone, but it's really to just highlight the movement that outdoors is for everybody and it should be a safe space. And, you know, unfortunately it's not the safest space. Like there's still a lot of harassment and racism and so many systemic barriers that we're dealing with right now when it comes to accessing the outdoors. Although for a lot of people, you know, they wouldn't believe that that's the case, but there are a lot of barriers. So yeah, so right now with Amplify Outdoors, we have a lot of merchandise that we promote, and we donate 10% to charity. And it goes towards an organization that is called Empowerment Squared that we're working with. And it goes towards their sport and outdoor recreation programming. And then another element that we do is consultation And we're just trying to also just build up our community so that like it'll be a safe space where people can feel that they can come together and, you know, they can speak about whatever issues that they're having and just really feel like it's a safe space where they belong. So we're just really trying to get that messaging out and really to help grow it. And yeah, it's been a lot of work, I won't lie. It's hard work, but it's very impactful and meaningful work, and I'm very happy to be doing it.
No, it's an amazing it's amazing work that you do, and you know, I think I hope I speak for everybody that listens to this and saying thank you for the work that you do. It's an incredible message to have, kind of targeting this clothing line and this brand at everybody. This is not targeted at the BikePok community, you know, only. This is targeted at everybody. Everybody's a trailblazer. They can wear this gear. They can spread this message. But it can't just stop there. You know, it can't just stop with representation and marketing in advertising. There are other things as well that, you know, are beyond our power.
Like these are just a lot of the systemic barriers that the BIPOC community face when it comes to accessing the outdoors. So when people often say, oh, well, why are you saying it's so hard? Like, you can just go there. Nature is like the space that, you know, you can just walk into. And they don't realize that there are so many barriers that make it so hard for people to access it, right? Particularly like the BIPOC community. So you mentioned like transportation. Not everyone has a vehicle. You know, like it's very hard to be able to get to these spaces if you don't have a vehicle. If you're living in a community, in a city, like, and you know, we don't necessarily have to use Ireland, but like if you're living in a city and you know, like a very highly populated city, it can take a long time to access a national park, to get to one. And if you don't have a vehicle, well, then you're probably not going to a park. And like, I can tell you that when I lived in Toronto, I didn't have a vehicle. So I wasn't even like, that would have probably another reason why I wasn't even thinking about going anywhere, because I wouldn't even know how to get there. And I remember with me and my friend, one time we did plan on going on a hike, and I remember we stumbled so much. She's Asian. And I remember like, we just couldn't even do the hike because we didn't even know how we were going to get there. It was so hard for us to even get there to begin with, to, you know, to just plan that part. We did not get to at all go to that hike. And then there's other things, like there are fees to get inside of parks that are also expensive, you know, and the equipment and gear is very costly as well. And which is why I tell people, like, just start off small and use what you have. But a lot of people feel overwhelmed. Like, if you've never done this before and you don't know what to do, you don't have friends that are doing this, where do you begin? And you might feel like, okay, well, I don't have the proper backpack. I don't have the proper hiking boots or the things that I need to go outdoors. I'm not going to do this. Like, I don't have that stuff. This is not for me. But you know what? Like, it depends on the hike you're doing or what activity you're doing outdoors. But I think that, like, I always tell people, like, start off with what you have, you know, and try not to like feel overwhelmed because you don't have all these different like bells and whistles that the outdoor world, you know, tries to market to people. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that can be difficult. And then also there's racism. Like, just even when you look at historically, like this segregation that took place at a lot of these parks and outdoor recreational spaces, you know, like for instance, at pools in the US, if you look at it, Black people weren't allowed to use swimming pools. And they couldn't use them, especially because it was like more catered to like white people and they didn't have them in their communities. So if they didn't have these pools in their communities, they weren't going to learn how to swim, right? And then we look at the fact that today young Black children are drowning at higher rates than non-Black children. And because many of them to this day still don't have access to pools. And we've seen these effects of like what racism has done, what segregation has done really, and these policies that were put to like separate people, but they still continue to really have power because they're still, you know, to this day, Black people are still drowning at higher rates. And there are a lot of communities where they don't have that access to pools because the pools that were there are now closing down or they're privatized. So if you don't have access to swimming lessons or you can't afford it, well, you're probably not going to learn how to swim, which is really a life skill. So, I mean, we see how like a lot of these things still kind of like have they perpetuate into today's society. Like, we've seen how it continues to manifest, and it's really scary. But like, we have to acknowledge that our history has so much power, and we can't ignore what has happened historically. We have to look at what's happened and how it really impacts people and our access to certain things, right? Because we were, like, at certain points told that we couldn't go to parks, we couldn't do certain things like that. And to this day, when there is that lack of representation, that might have trickled down from the segregation, that fear of being outdoors, the fear of like being lynched or whatever things that Black people have experienced, you know, you do feel like it's not necessarily the safest space for you to be outdoors. And there are still things that are happening to people on a regular basis. And I know people that have told me that people have said to them, hey, like, you're a Black person. Like, why are you out here? Why are you doing this activity? There's still a lot of people that stereotype and say, hey, like, really, you want to do this? Like, this is something you want to try doing? So I think that we have to be aware of like all these different things that are coming together that really make it kind of harder for people of color, like from the Black, Indigenous, and other racialized communities, to want to be outdoors and to like feel like it's always the safest space, because like there really is not that much representation, right? So like, we're doing it, but we're so ignored in like these companies. Like, they just act like we don't exist.
So there's kind of clear ideas for what companies should be doing. Obviously, in terms of marketing, there has to be more representation. But even on an individual level, what can people do to maybe in the outdoor community to combat this?
Well, I think that there needs to be the education aspect that we kind of discussed earlier. I think that like people should really understand the history of race and like colonialism, and understand the impacts it's had in around the world, really, right? So, because it's not just like Canada, it's not Ireland or the US, it's around the world, and like really understanding what's happened. And I think also we need to have people that once they now have that education, and if they're an outdoor enthusiast, I think you need to invite your friends that are from the Black, Indigenous, and other racialized communities or diverse communities. You need to invite them out on outdoor activities with you. I don't know if everyone has friends from different communities. I mean, some people don't, so it might be challenging. But if you do, I really encourage you to like invite your friends to go on activities with you that are outdoors, and give them that access and exposure to it. Because I know for me, like when I brought some of my friends along, they were so grateful for that experience, because they never did it and they did not realize how much happiness and joy they would get from it. And I remember one of my friends that I brought on a hike with me this summer, she said to me that like she was like so grateful. And you know, sometimes you don't even realize it, even with the work that I do, but she was like, you know, it's because of you that like I was able to do this. Like, I would never have done this if you didn't bring me out here. And then the following week she brought her husband, because she wanted him to experience it. And it's just that it's something like a lot of people don't realize that they enjoy it because they're not doing it, right? So it's just kind of breaking these layers and getting people out there and letting them have like getting them exposed to the outdoors and just really seeing if it's something they're going to enjoy. And I'm not saying everyone's going to enjoy it, but I think a lot of people do. And I think that people should be able to have that opportunity to see for themselves what they are going to enjoy. And like another simple thing too, in regards to just like an individual level, is like, just be inviting and be like nice. Like if you see someone on the trails, just say hi. You know, like we already feel very much stigmatized and uncomfortable, and just say hi. Like if you see someone, just you know, like my aunt would tell me that she felt like she was always invisible. She'd go on hikes and like no one would say hi. And I think that people don't recognize that we already feel a little bit uncomfortable outdoors. So I think just saying hi can really go a long way. Like kindness is really a really nice thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's so funny because, well, it's not particularly funny, but it's strange how, you know, the outdoors community, like generally, and this is probably coming from my perspective, obviously as a white dude, you know, I would perceive the outdoors community as a friendly community, but that's obviously from my position. You know, I wouldn't know what it's like from your position. But from your perspective, it's not really. And I would imagine from most of the people in bike park community, they have had instances where they just haven't felt welcome in the ASO community, which for me, and I hope for a lot of people that are listening to this, would break your heart too, that, you know, that someone came and did the thing that you love and you're passionate about, and they didn't feel welcome. You know, that's just not right. You know, at a very, very basic level, that's just not right. And I think that should be just, you know, normalized. I don't see what's wrong with that. I just think it's a really, really basic thing, just to invite someone to enjoy the thing that you love. That should be, you know, basic. Anyway, sorry, I went off on a little bit of a rant there.
No, I just think that it depends sometimes on where you're located, because when I was in Ontario and I was with my aunt hiking, people wouldn't really say hi to us, but I tried to make an effort to say hi to them. And I've done other trails where sometimes, you know, people would say hi to me in the north, like when I would be hiking. And I think it's also because it's a smaller community, so people would just say hi because they tend to just say hi like that in general. But I think, yeah, there's a lot of variables, but I don't see why people, if you're in a similar space, cannot just say hi to someone. Like, I don't see why that's such an issue and why people don't make more of an effort to be more inviting and welcoming. And also just like culturally sensitive and aware. Like, you know, like, I think that people need to understand, and that's why I talk about the education aspect, like understanding like historically how it's been for people of color to access the outdoors, and that we've really been told we don't belong. And policy was enforced to just even more stress that this was not a space for us. So like now when we're like going in these spaces, I just think that there should be that awareness that like we might be coming in feeling already a little bit uncomfortable, and just saying hi to me is like the least that can be done. And it's just a nice way of like making people feel a lot more accepted, and like not in a fake way or anything, but just hi.
And a sports like you would smile. To anybody
you
else.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. It's not that hard. So, but yeah, it's, I think that people just don't realize how layered it is and how complex it is. But, and it's really not an issue I don't think people talk about enough, but I think there needs to be more awareness.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. There has to be. And I suppose I have heard of, you know, a lot more instances of racism and microaggressions and things that are popping up a lot more lately, just from monitoring, I suppose, social media and just hearing of the different discussions that are going on in, I suppose, the hiking community and the long distance hiking community in particular, because it there'd be a very kind of vocal community that would be there, and. It, as I said before, like it kind of breaks my heart that these things are still happening, you know. And again, I'm coming from a place of, you know, I'm a white guy living in Ireland. The most of the population is white, and I've always grown up with that. But just to hear that another human being is being treated in a different way to what I've experienced, it's not right. And it's as simple as making someone feel as welcome as you would want to be feel welcome. Obviously, there's a lot more that needs to be done on policy at a systemic level, but on an individual level, it's as simple as making someone feel welcome in the place that you feel welcome.
Yeah, you know, like invite your friends along, invite people along. And if someone doesn't have gear, you know, if you're comfortable, I know not everyone's comfortable with it because it's expensive, but if someone needs like to borrow a tent and they've never done it before and they're like, you know, I want to try camping, I've never done it, and you're not able to go with them, or you know, you're like, you know, I'll let you do your thing. If you can and you're comfortable with it, let them borrow your tent or let them borrow your cooler or something. Like, I can't tell you how many times I had to borrow from people because I didn't have those things and it's expensive. So I had to slowly build up my gear collection. But like, I wanted to do it, like, especially once I tried it and I said, you know what, I want to try it again. Okay, well, do I go out and buy a tent or something, or like, and buy all these things that I need in cooking gear and pots and all this stuff? Or do I just see like what my friends have and what they're willing to share with me? And that's what I did. Like, I didn't have a sleeping bag and I still don't have one. I use like comforters and stuff like that, you know, but like slowly I'm building my gear collection. But I still love the outdoors. And I don't think that just because I don't have all those things means that I'm not outdoorsy or that I'm not as passionate as the next person. And I really want to see like this, I want to really see more diversity outdoors. And I want to see people getting back into the outdoors, because I think naturally a lot of us came from a place where we were on the land and we were really like, you know, being able to live off of it and cultivate. But like, you know, we've seen the impacts of colonialism and what's happened. So there's like this the separation for us. And a lot of us don't realize like how healing the land is and how much, like how beautiful it is and nurturing. And I really want to see like more of that connection, that for people to build that connection and that relationship with nature. It's just so important. And there's so many health benefits from being outdoors. So it's really important. And one of the things that I plan on doing with Amplify Outdoors too, which I didn't mention earlier, but I plan on doing community events and community engagement. So while I am building our online community, like people can join us on Instagram and our Facebook pages and so forth, and we build that community, but I want an external community outdoors as well. Like I want people to start experiencing nature as well and get involved in different activities. So I'm planning on doing some events, and it's been difficult with, you know, the COVID restrictions and things that we're dealing with, but I am planning on doing some events outdoors and just different things to get people engaged and get people outdoors and having fun. And I don't know if you've seen, but I recently started an outdoor dance challenge on my Instagram because I want people to be dancing outdoors and to have fun and to show what the outdoors looks like. Like, I just really want it to be like a very fun experience for people and for them to get other, kind of just start that movement and get people outdoors. You don't have to be dancing outdoors, but I mean, the idea is to just show them how like appealing it is to be outdoors, right? And how much.
Are you sure you don't want to see my moves? I've got
some send it, and I encourage you to. Like, this is for everyone to participate in, and we just want people to just show the joy that they have when they're outdoors, because it's such a beautiful place to be outdoors. It's such a great space, and I just want it to be a space where everyone feels invited and welcome to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I know a few friends that are pretty good dancers, so I'll try and get some stuff for your social media feed. I want to move on, but I just one thing that you said there was about loaning gear, and it just reminded me that I've had my friend Mel's tent for the last year. So Mel, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I will get it back to you ASAP. I want to move on just to a couple of more philosophical questions, if you don't mind. Yeah. So first one is this is a hiking a podcast, obviously, and I know you've done quite a bit of hiking yourself. So I want to know about your experience of hiking in Canada. What have you learned from hiking in Canada that you wouldn't have known beforehand?
Yeah, that's a great question. So most of my hiking has been in the Northwest Territories, but because that's when it all started for me. That's when my whole chapter began. But I've also done hiking in BC. And the interesting thing, which I now realized, is that hiking in the Northwest Territories versus hiking in BC, and I'm sure this is across Canada, it's just very different. And it's interesting because I think in the north, like, we don't really have mountains, so we do have hills. So you are like hiking sometimes more on flat ground in the Northwest Territories, and then you're going up hills. Like, I did a hill recently. I did a hike called a Big Hill recently, and I've done one called.
It was big.
It was a big hill, yeah. And I did Rainy Hill as well, and. So I'm just trying to say it properly because I always call it Rainy for some reason, but it's Rainy, I believe. And so that one, you do climb up and then you get to see this beautiful view of three different lakes, and it's really nice. And it's not too far from where I live as well, which is convenient too when you're trying to like go to on a nice day hike. So especially because it's getting darker now. So that's why, you know. But anyways, I find that ours are a little bit more hilly, but when I was doing the hikes in BC, for instance, it is very elevated. Like, you're climbing up a mountain, and it is like, it can be really tough. And your level of oxygen can be like, it goes down a lot because you're going up a mountain. So it's a very different experience, which I don't really have when I'm in the north. And I mean, I still feel like I have a workout in the north too. Like I said, there are hills and we're climbing up rocks, but I just didn't realize that like how steep it is sometimes when you're like going up some of these mountains in BC. So that's an interesting thing for sure. It's made me actually want to do more hiking. Living in the north has made me just want to hike like all around the world because now I'm just so curious. And every time I go somewhere, all I think about is going on a hike. Like even when I go back to Ontario, I'm just like, where can I hike? And I ask people all the time, like, where would you recommend it? Because I'm from Toronto. And I feel like I just didn't realize that there might have been trails that were not like so far that I could have accessed, but I just didn't know about anything like that because I was never looking for it. It wasn't on my mind. So I always ask people, like, is there a trail? Is there like a gem? Like, where can I go? Because like, I feel like I just constantly need that now. It's part of my life. And yeah, like, I think it's going to be something I do wherever I travel. Like, I'm going to always want to go on and like a little adventure or a little hike somewhere because I just love it so much. You know, like there's two things that I like doing when I go on vacations now. Going to museums because I love museums and checking out what like and seeing history, and then going on a hike and like having an adventure. So those are the things that I look for. And I think it was definitely sparked from moving to the Northwest Territories. I'm definitely much more of a risk taker. I definitely just want to like just explore and try different things. I'm so curious about things and places. And yeah, like it's just been a really great awakening for me. It's been really amazing, to be honest, my outdoor experience.
So it's kind of like there's a discovery of Canada, a discovery of the outdoors, a discovery of love of the hike of hiking, but there's also a bit of a self-discovery as well, that there's, you know, there is this risk taker in you. Yeah,
I didn't even know I was adventurous. Like I would never have considered myself adventurous. My coworker, I was telling her about all these like little hikes and things I'd be doing. And she's like, wow, you're so adventurous. And I was like, oh, wow. Like I didn't even, you know, like it was just strange hearing someone say that about me. And now I can actually confidently say that I'm adventurous, but I just never saw that as for myself. Like, I don't know, everything I'm doing just feels so like different from what I expect that I'm supposed to do. And I think too, as a woman, like, yes, as a Black woman, but I think as a woman too, like we could even dig into that because I think that we have an idea of like femininity and what women should be doing and like how they should behave. And, you know, like when you even look at outdoors culture and you look at some certain places, like women weren't allowed to do certain things, you know, with men. So even just that, like, I think for me, every time I do something, I feel like, wow, like, you know, like, look what I've accomplished. Like, I'm really proud of all the experiences I've had and all the things I've been able to see. And it does shape me. Like, I'm definitely just, you know, I'm always excited to try something new and see something and really explore this country more than ever before. I think moving to the North really awakened something in me. And it makes me like curious about the rest of Canada because, yeah, there's just so much that I want to see. So I am planning on doing a little bit of traveling around this country at some point, and I'm really excited for that.
Awesome. Well, it's like this universal universal language. You know, wherever you go, you know you're going to go hiking. And like the hiking might be different, like in BC versus Yellowknife versus Ontario versus anywhere else in the world. The hiking might be a little bit different. But it's kind of like it's just this base language. You're like, yeah, it's one foot in front of the other. I might be going up a hill, I might be going down a hill. When you come to Ireland, you'll notice it's wet and there's a lot of mud and it's dull. Ireland's lovely. Come to Ireland. But it's the same everywhere. It is the same everywhere. Yeah. And it's just once you have it, it kind of takes you everywhere. And that curiosity you were talking about earlier on, you want to hike everywhere in the world. You do, like, genuinely, once you get to the top of that first mountain or you get that first vista or you're in that forest or something, you just get bitten by something, not literally, figuratively. And you're like, oh yeah, this is for me. I want to do this everywhere.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. You're right. And that's the thing, you know, like, I think people get so scared about things like hiking. I think it's like, oh, I don't know if it's for me. And yeah, like, I think it sounds scarier than it is, but then when you do it, you're like, oh, okay, I can do this. I mean, obviously there's different levels of difficulty, but
of course.
I know that I kind of like have been definitely like rubbing off on people, because even my mom, who like never really wants to be outdoors, is like, I can't wait for you to come and visit so we can go on a hike. And I'm like, what? Like my mom wanting to hike with me? So it's just interesting to like hear how she's even talking now. And yeah, like I think it's so fantastic. And like, you know, my mom's of a different generation where like she never did that and wasn't exposed to that. And now she's like, I want to go on a hike, you know, and just hearing that come out of her mouth, I'm like, okay, that's cool. Yeah, sure.
When your parents get on board, that's you kind of know that you're onto something. They're like, what's my child doing? I want to get involved in that. Yeah, look, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I really appreciate you coming on to this for the second time. It's not the first time we've tried this, but I really appreciate this. But I want to ask you one last question. It's a question I'm asking in every single show this season. What does hiking mean to you? Well, actually, let's broaden that out, because this is a hiking show, but I suppose you fell in love with the outdoors as a whole. So what does the outdoors mean to you?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I would say the outdoors just means feeling alive, like being alive and feeling really, like really free, in a way of just being able to just, you feel like you're almost like by yourself, like you're the only person, but like, obviously this world there's so many people, but it's a way to kind of just get lost and to just like really, just be like, it's so hard to explain, but just let that curiosity roam and just feel alive. And it's just so healing, you know, like it's just such a special place. And yeah, I probably don't have the right words right now, but yeah, I would just really like say that it makes me feel really alive and really healed. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Yeah. I really feel like it's such a healing space. And for me, it's a transformation. Like it's a complete transformation for my life. And it has a transformative quality of like, just, you know, like you could be going through like this really down day and then you're out in nature and you're like, wow. And it just sparks something in you. Like it has this ability to just fire something in your soul and like just have it course through your whole being. So I just love all of that. And yeah, it just really is. It's like, you know, it's like my medicine. Like it just makes it something I need. It's really gives me a lot of joy and happiness.
Yeah, it's such a common answer. Not in the exact words, but it's a common theme that people do kind of have that healing that comes from the outdoors, and it's as if time almost stands completely still, and you actually feel, I keep saying insignificant at this point, I keep saying you feel insignificant, but you feel significantly insignificant, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You feel very, very small, but you feel like you're part of a bigger thing.
That's yeah, and like especially in the north, just because you mentioned feeling like insignificantly significant, because it's so remote, and like sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm just trying, like I went on a hike recently and we were like, let's just walk over here, like this could just be like some random little trail, like it's just like a natural trail, let's just check it out. And like because we're so remote and we have such a small population, so you can really be somewhere and not see people, you know, and and sometimes I think to myself, because I know not a lot of people have been to the north, like to the Northwest Territory specifically, I feel like I'm like this tiny little ant, you know, like this person that's just walking in the world on this hike all by myself, and then there are people in this other space doing all these other things, and like I get like really like I get really in my head, but it's just crazy thinking about like walking this world and doing different things while other people are doing other things too, right? And it's just crazy because sometimes I feel like I'm walking on a space or on a spot that like very few have been. And I feel like that's really cool and like, mm-hmm. you know, and really meaningful. And yeah, and like just every like adventure, it feels really nice to like to just be able to like conquer something else and to challenge myself every single time. So yeah, like I get into deep thought when I'm on hikes, but like, yeah, that's one of the things that I think of, is just like the fact that I'm like walking in this like spot that like not a lot of people have done it, and just being like, wow, you know. And
you also feel like you are the first person that's ever walked there. Sometimes you'll yeah. turn around and kind of go, you like, there's no one around, and you just like, you just came across this amazing view of a valley or something like that, and you're like, oh god, I wonder, we probably didn't even think about it. You probably just like, you just have this feeling of like, I've just discovered this for the first time, no one has ever seen this ever. You know,
and also too, like, you think, wow, like I also think I want other people to eventually see this too, to have this experience, you know, like, because you think, wow, like I feel blessed, like, to be honest, every time I go on any type of hike, I think, wow, like, this is so great, and I want others to be able to experience this too. Like I really feel like,
sorry, you get that feeling though when you've seen that, and then you want to like bring someone up and go, look at this.
Yeah, like, look at how cool this is. And yeah, for sure. And I think too that I think coming from a big city, like, the one of the things that the outdoors does is like, it's just so beautiful. You know what I mean? Because like, I've seen a lot in the city, but like, man, nature, you know what I mean? It's like, that's amazing right there. And like, there's something new all the time. There's something
for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. So Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. Love hearing your stories of your adventures, and also your insight into this. I would definitely recommend people check out your organization, Amplify the Outdoors. It's on all social media platforms. We'll definitely put it into our show notes so people can link directly through. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us share our stories and our love of the outdoors, and I hope that you share that love with everybody else. Kristen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you today.
Okay, well, let's catch up soon.
Definitely.
So there you have it, season 3, episode 1. Season 3, guys. I'm actually so pumped about this. We've got so many episodes come. I've already got a bunch of interviews done already, ready to go, and I'm still doing them. So there's just going to be loads of interviews. And if you want to come on, you want to talk about hiking as much as I want to talk about hiking, get in touch. It's just podcast@hiker.co. Podcast@hiker.co. Let's have a chat. Don't forget, Hiker Pod promo code, you'll get up to 25% off any of the Pro Hiker products. Thanks again to Kristen Berkeley for coming on and sharing her story and sharing her experience. Really, the biggest takeaway from this is education, guys. We just need to educate ourselves on these things. It's as simple as that. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed making it, albeit uncomfortable. But as I said, these are the conversations that need to be had. And sometimes these conversations are uncomfortable. I'm glad I had that conversation. I'm glad I met Kristen. And I hope to have her on the show again sometime in the future. Okay, guys, until next week, happy trails. Sorry, I forgot something else. You've probably figured this out by now, but we have new music. What do you think? Pretty cool, huh? Yeah, I'm gonna let this play out. Enjoy, and I'll speak to you next week.